I'm David Baddiel. I'm a writer and a comedian and a Jew.
I'm Saeeda Varsi. I'm a businesswoman and a politician and a Muslim.
Jews and Muslims always seem to be in the news or on the news. Lots of people talk about us, and this is us talking about ourselves.
The kind of things that people say don't touch, We are going to go there.
I mean, I think Jews and Muslims are talking about these things, but I think they're not talking about them together because they're worried that if they do, sparks might fly. A Muslim and a Jew go there.
Find us wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to the Agony Aunties podcast mini-series. Each week, we're diving into some of your questions and offering our unique insights and therapeutic expertise to help you navigate life's challenges. As seasoned therapists, I'm quite a lot more seasoned than my daughters. We're here to share our thoughts, perspectives, and a dose of compassion. So get ready for each episode where listener questions take center stage, and we do our best to provide you with thoughtful guidance and a touch of wisdom. The question I have this week is, I'm a newly qualified therapist setting up private practice. I love your podcast. Thank you for loving our podcast. I get lots of tips as I'm time poor due to having to also work part-time as a solicitor, which I don't enjoy. This request is basic, but I would welcome advice on how to help build a client's self-esteem, as this is a recurring theme. It's a big thing, self-esteem, isn't it?
First of all, congratulations on becoming a therapist. Welcome.
Join the gang.
Yeah, I think that is a big question. I imagine part of it depends on the type of therapist that you are, as to kind of how you approach it, like a CBT therapist versus a psychodynamic therapist. But I think if I had a client with low self-esteem, I think I would sort of take a deep dive approach and a kind of on top approach at the same time, so that you're sort of exploring the origins of it. Like, how do you make sense of the fact that you really struggle with yourself, as a way to kind of begin to maybe rewrite that narrative, or at least understand where that kind of comes from, so you're sort of connecting the dots. But then I think there's also sort of like behavioral stuff that you can do at the same time, like gratitudes, mindfulness, journaling, whatever sort of fits with your client.
The thing that helps with is changing the input that's circulating around your system, and that you can have a very negative mindset and a very negative critical mind. So by journaling, you begin to see what you're actually saying to yourself. But also being gratitude, it just changes your kind of body chemistry, like you're aware of what's good in your life, and that helps build your confidence, which helps build self-esteem.
Right, like sort of seeing what you do have, or what you do enjoy or feel good about, or, you know, all of those sorts of things. And then I think the sort of final bit, which is always a big thing in most types of therapy, is the relationship, right? Like the relationship between you and your client. So what's sort of going on in the transference relationship, what's going on in the counter-transference, and a kind of learning from that to sort of inform your knowledge of what's going on for this person, and kind of using that in the therapy.
So what they tend to assume you're thinking about them, or how they respond to you, how you respond to them.
Because that often gives you a lot of information, like your reaction. Yeah.
Because how they are in the outside world is often how they are in the room.
I was also going to add that as a person-centered therapist, which is what my main training is, I think my response would be that the kind of qualities that I would be supporting and offering in my way of being with my client would bring what, you know, within person-centered therapy, sort of the five conditions. But three of the core ones are known as empathy, unconditional positive regard, which is not having judgment, and congruence, which is being myself, which in the case of self-esteem, I would see that as offering conditions of which my client would have a reparative experience within therapy, as someone who was valued and esteemed, and that my attentiveness, my listening, my responses would give them not only would they hear themselves back at themselves, as in, oh, this is the stuff I'm saying about myself, a bit like journaling, but also have a reparative spent, a sort of experience of being highly valued and being held and cared about, even if in that time they're not able to value and care about themselves in the same way.
Yeah, I think that's lovely. As you were both talking, I was wondering, and I don't know how many people use this in therapy, is, you know, maybe the client being aware of their self-esteem in different identities, in different versions of themselves, that we can have high self-esteem with a particular person or in a particular place or a particular role or kind of good enough self-esteem. And then we can feel it sink to the bottom in other areas. So kind of examine within her life and her roles and the people who are in her life, where are the areas that she feels strong in and where she feels more vulnerable. And then I was also thinking, like, doing a mood board, like matching that with a mood board, like how she feels internally, the colours and shapes in herself, other things that she wears or music that she listens to that she feels kind of stronger and better about herself. I think in some ways exploring ourselves in multimodal ways gives you a kind of multimodal view of yourself. And that's what therapy does fundamentally, is give you ways of understanding yourself.
I think that's really nice. I think that's great. The other thought I had, it's not related, was, this is a phrase I think you've reused often, Mum, is just because you think something or feel something, it doesn't mean it's true. And I think when you have low self-esteem, you're often running a negative loop in your head about yourself. There's a very loud, critical part. I think supporting clients to differentiate between
it's true
what they're saying or that critical part from themselves, just because you think that about yourself, it doesn't actually mean it's true. And that little breather, that little gap between hearing it, noticing it in that sort of mindful way versus emotionally fully investing 100%, that's what I am. It really gives an opportunity to respond differently when you can create that gap, because then you can bring in other parts of yourself that might go, oh, I can really hear how critical I'm feeling today. So once you have that awareness or that gap where you're not fully identified with the thoughts and the feelings, then you have more opportunity to bring other parts of yourself in, a more compassionate part, or stepping away and going, oh, I can really hear that. It's really noisy today. It's really critical today. Are there other things I can do to support myself to feel good? And it's not about fighting it or pushing it out or going to war with it. It's noticing it and also trying to support yourself at the same time.
Yeah, I think there's lots of lovely mindfulness exercises around exactly that, like imagining your thoughts as a train, that your brain is the station and your thoughts are the train. You don't have to get on the train. You can allow the train to keep on going, or like people passing in the street. You can let the person pass. You don't have to give them a cup, sit down and have a cup of tea with them. Like those sorts of images. Yeah. It's like, hello. Oh, there you are again.
There you are again. I'm going to walk around you this time. Yeah.
It's a lot of mindfulness.
It reminds me of the Helena Bonham Carter episode, where she talks about when she's watching herself on screen and she kind of, in a very comedic way, says all her negative thoughts out loud. She sings it and she laughs at it, and it does sort of send it up and kind of take the intensity and the sort of seriousness that you take that kind of negative chat.
It's like a third eye, isn't it? That you don't dive into it and make it worse. You kind of step back and you can see yourself from a different perspective and be more lighthearted. So I think those are lovely suggestions. Thank you for the question. And all of you who have an Agony Auntie question, do DM me on my Instagram page at Julia Samuel MBE. If you think this is a question that your friends or family would benefit from, do share it. Do rate and subscribe. And thank you so much for listening to our podcast, and see you soon.